Welcome to Gospel Truth with Andrew Womack, a teaching ministry that focuses on God's unconditional love and grace, celebrating 20 years of discipling others through Charis Bible College worldwide. And now, here's Andrew.
Welcome to our Wednesday's broadcast of the Gospel Truth. Today, I'm continuing to teach on a hardened heart. And actually, we're now down to the cure for a hardened heart, and I'm talking about how you can reverse this process. Whereas most of us have been hardened, insensitive, cold, unfeeling, and unyielding towards God, and we've been sensitive to the world, to the devil, and to all of the doubt and the unbelief, you can reverse this process to where you become so sensitive to God and so focused on God that you just don't know how to disbelieve God. I know that sounds impossible to a lot of people, but man, that's the way that I'm living my life. Don't wake me up. I'm susceptible to things the way that other people are, but not the way that I used to be, because I have been seeking God and putting my heart upon God, and it has changed my heart. And today, I'm just living differently than I used to. And it's because of all of the times that I've set my heart on the things of God, it has just made a difference. So we were talking about this out of Matthew chapter 17. Jesus' disciples were unable to do what He told them to do. He told them to go heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, cast out devils. Matthew chapter 10, verse 8. And they had done it. They came back rejoicing, saying, even the devils were subject unto us. But in Matthew 17 is an instance where a man had a son who the Bible here, the King James, calls him a lunatic. And most people believe that this was some type of a seizure. It gave a description of this in Mark chapter 9. And he fell on the ground and wallowed and foamed at the mouth. And his father said sometimes this spirit would cast him into the fire and sometimes into the water. So it was some kind of a physical thing like a seizure. And the disciples were unable to cast this demon out, and Jesus had to do it for them. And then they asked Him, why couldn't we cast this demon out? Most people would just say, well, it's because you didn't believe, or you didn't have enough faith. And I mentioned on my program yesterday, the NIV says in verse 20, this is Matthew 17, 20, it's because of your little faith. But that is absolutely wrong. The rest of this verse completely goes against that, saying you don't need big faith. You just need a mustard seed, a tiny amount of faith, and you can speak to a mountain and it'll remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. So it wasn't the fact that they didn't have faith or that they had little faith. It was the fact that they had unbelief. And here is a concept that most people don't have. Most people think you either believe, and that excludes you having any unbelief, or if you have any unbelief, that excludes you having faith. They think that they are mutually exclusive. But Jesus told the man over in Mark chapter 9, the same instance recorded in Mark chapter 9, the man said, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. And Jesus didn't rebuke him, saying, no, that's wrong. And then Mark chapter 11, verse 23, it says, if you believe and say and doubt not in your heart, then you'll have what you say. And again, Jesus talked about having faith and believing and yet not doubting at the same time. You can believe and doubt at the same time. Mark chapter 5, Jairus heard this report that his daughter was dead. There's no point in troubling the master anymore. And Jesus said, fear not, only believe. Why did He say only believe? It's because you can believe and disbelieve at the same time. Now, this is new to most people. Most people, they just think, I've got to believe. And they try and somehow or another get rid of any unbelief, and they just think, if I could just believe. No, you can believe and yet have unbelief counterbalancing, pulling in an opposite direction. Here's an example that I've used a lot. You've probably heard me say it, but it's like if you had a weight in front of you that was too heavy for you to move by yourself. But if you could hook a horse up to that, this horse could exert enough power to drag that weight and to move it. But if you had a horse of equal strength hooked up to that weight, pulling in the opposite direction, then those two forces would counterbalance each other. They would negate each other. And even though there was tremendous force being exerted by these horses, the weight would never move because it was negated, canceled out by the opposing force. Well, see, that's the way that I see faith and unbelief operating. You can believe, and if your faith was pure, if it didn't have anything pulling in an opposite direction, your little mustard seed amount of faith would be enough to see a mountain cast into the sea. But if it has unbelief pulling in the other direction, then that negates and cancels faith. You see, most people don't think that way, and because of that, they don't even try and deal with the unbelief. They just think, I need to believe more. I need to be stronger in my faith. And so what they do is try and get somebody to pray with them, add more faith to it, but they never deal with the unbelief that they've got. You know, I gave this illustration earlier about me praying for a man who was in a wheelchair, and I pulled him out and he fell on his face. We did not see the physical healing that he wanted and that I wanted. And some people would say, well, you just didn't believe God. That's not true. I know I believed God. That's the reason I pulled this man out of a wheelchair. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't have any faith. I had just seen a person raised from the dead, and I thought, man, if you can see him raised from the dead, you can see him come out of a wheelchair. I had faith. But when this man fell on his face and when everybody in the crowd gasped and I just could feel the unbelief, the fear. You know what? I was too sensitive to it. I was letting other people's fear and my own thoughts. I mean, I felt embarrassed. I thought, I've embarrassed this man. I've embarrassed God. And I was sensitive to all of those things. In John chapter 5, verse 44, Jesus said, "How can you believe which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that comes from God alone?" You know what? If you are sensitive to what other people think, then you are not going to be strong in faith. You are going to have their opinion constantly hinder you. If you're a politically correct person that you've got to say everything and keep from offending people, you're never going to be strong in faith. And see, I was just too sensitive to what people had to say. It wasn't the fact that I didn't have faith. It's the fact that I had unbelief. When I didn't see the right results, I knew what people were thinking. I knew what myself was thinking. I was worried about what that man was thinking. I was sensitive, see, to all of these other things. And that made me hardened towards God. And one of the ways that I learned this, I read a book about Smith Wigglesworth. Some of you may not know who he was, but he was a man that ministered in the first part of the 1900s. He died, I think, around 1949 or 50, something like that. And he was a powerful man. He saw people raised from the dead. He saw great, great miracles. He was famous for the miracles that God did through him. And anyway, I was reading about him, and it was one of his typical things that he would do is to start a service and say the very first person to get up here on the stage will be healed of whatever disease that they've got. And he would pray for them, and he would see them healed. And that would gain people's attention. Then he would explain through the Word of God, preach a message on how it happened. And then he would give an altar call, and he'd go minister to people, and he would see dozens, hundreds of people healed. And that's the way he would do his meetings. So people knew about this, and one time he started a meeting and he said, the very first person to get up here on the stage will be healed of whatever they've got. And there were these two ladies that had a friend of theirs, an elderly woman. I don't know how old she was, but she was frail and she had cancer, and she had this huge tumor in her belly that made her look like she was 9 months pregnant. And so these two women grabbed their friend, put her on the stage, and were standing there on each side of her holding her up because she was too frail to even stand on her own. And they got up there to be the very first person. So Smith just spoke to them and he says, "Let her go." And they said, "We can't let her go. She can't stand on her own." And he raised his voice and said, "I said let her go." And they let her go. And this woman fell over on top of this tumor in her stomach and let out a cry of pain. And when that happened, all of the people in the crowd, they went, sucked all of the air out of the room. It was exactly what I experienced in Omaha, Nebraska, when I pulled that man out of the wheelchair, and instead of him standing up, he fell on his face. There was the exact same thing. It was very similar. But see, here's the difference. I believe that Smith had faith. I know that I had faith, but here's the difference. When things didn't work the very first time, I was moved by what everybody else thought. I was sensitive to them. I was more sensitive to people and the fear and the embarrassment than I was to God and what God said. Another way of saying that is my heart was hardened, relatively hardened towards God, and it was more sensitive to people and what they had to think. But did you know what Smith did when that happened to him? He just told those ladies, he says, pick her up. So they picked this woman up. She was standing in front of them again with her two friends holding her up. And Smith said, let her go. And these women said, no, we will not let her go. She'll fall again. And he yelled at them and said, I said, let her go. And they let her go a second time. And this woman fell over on top of that tumor and let out a cry of pain. And Smith just said, pick her up. See, he didn't care what other people thought. And finally, the third time, he says, let her go. And these women said, we will not let her go. And he yelled at them saying, let her go. And finally, a man in the audience stood up and he said, you beast, leave that poor woman alone. And Smith yelled at this guy and said, you mind your own business. I know my business. And then he yelled at those women and said, let her go. And they let her go. And this time that tumor just fell out of her dress on the stage and she walked off completely healed of cancer. Let me propose to you that Smith didn't have 1 ounce more faith than I had, but he had a lot less unbelief. He didn't care what other people thought. He wasn't sensitive to what other people thought. You know, I read this book, and his son-in-law is the one that wrote this book and compiled all of these things together. And his son-in-law said in that book that one of the biggest criticisms against Smith was that he was hard. And people said he wasn't sensitive to people. But you know what? He was hardened towards the devil and sensitive towards God. He had a promise that you lay hands on the sick and they shall recover. And he didn't consider anything else. Smith used to hit people and poke people and do things and slap them. There was one instance where he actually took a little baby that had a swollen head, one of these water retained on the head, and he took this baby that I don't even know, but it was less than a year old. Baby couldn't walk. And he took the baby, he was on stage, and he kicked the baby into the front row of seats. I'm not saying that that's the way it should be done. I'm just saying that's what he did. This is a historical fact. And when the baby hit the front row of seats, it was healed. And see, people said, he's hard. And Smith, the way he responded to that, he says, I'm not mad at people when I hit and poke. He says, I'm just after the devil. I can't help it if their body gets in the way. And I'm not saying that we have to be like that, but I am saying that, see, Smith didn't give a rip what anybody else thought. If you are going to empathize with the people that you pray for, you aren't going to see a lot of healings because you will feel what they feel. And it's what they feel and their discouragement and fear and their sadness and stuff. This is what is hindering them from getting healed. And if you sympathize and empathize with them to where you feel what they feel, you're going to be as ineffective as they are. You've got to get to where you hate sickness, where you listen to God and you are sensitive to God. And if, this is a big if, God tells you to hit them where that sickness is, if God tells you to do it, well, then you obey God and you don't care what that person thinks, what other people think. You do what God tells you to do. But see, most of us are more sensitive to public opinion. We're afraid that if we do something, we're going to be criticized. I can guarantee you, because I've been on television now for 16 years, and I've received a lot of criticism. I'll have people criticize me because I'm using these examples of Smith Wigglesworth, they will say, you shouldn't be encouraging. And it's because they are so sensitive to what everybody else thinks. I will receive criticism over it. And people say, oh no, you've got to be sensitive. And I would never do anything to hurt a person or do whatever. And because you are so sensitive to what everybody else thinks, you aren't going to see these miraculous things happen. I have people criticize me about I'm insensitive and I'm not compassionate. No wonder you aren't a pastor. And you can say what you want to, but I've seen a lot of miracles happening. One of the reasons is because I am sensitive to what God tells me to do. Not as sensitive as I need to be, as I want to be. But I'm more sensitive to God than I used to be, and I'm more sensitive to God than what people have to say. I tell you, this political correctness stuff is of the devil. For you to be so fearful to say anything because somebody might take offense, man, it's just, that's not the way it works. Jesus said that, man, if they aren't planted by my Father, they'll be rooted up. Let the blind lead the blind. They'll both fall into a ditch. When they said, don't you know that the Pharisees were offended? He says, let them be offended. You cannot be fearful of what other people have to say. And this is exactly the reason that when I pulled this man out of the wheelchair, I didn't get any worse results than Smith did with that woman who had the tumor. Both times, in both instances, back in the 1940s when he pulled that woman, I mean, he let the friends let her go and she fell on her tumor. We didn't see physical manifestation. When I pulled that man out of the wheelchair, we didn't see a physical manifestation. But the difference was not that Smith had more faith than I did. He had less unbelief. He didn't care what other people had to say. He wasn't worried about a public opinion thing the way that I was. And because of it, he just picked her up and he kept after it until he saw the manifestation. Instead, I totally got into unbelief and fear, thinking about what's everybody going to think. I felt sorry for this man. Feeling sorry for people is not going to get them well. And I'll probably get criticism off that. But I'm just telling you that this is what the problem is. Jesus didn't tell them, guys, you just didn't have enough faith. Your faith was too little. You didn't have... No, he says it's your unbelief. What unbelief did they have? Over in the 9th chapter of the book of Mark, where this is reported, Mark 9:20, they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tear him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming. So we can assume that that's probably what happened when the disciples tried to cast this out, that the spirit manifested itself. This boy fell on the ground and wallowed and foamed at the mouth. And this caused fear in them. It caused unbelief. They probably were thinking, oh no, what is everybody in this crowd going to think? It doesn't look like this boy's getting better. He's getting worse. Well, that same thing happened to Jesus, but the difference was Jesus didn't respond in unbelief. He only believed God, and because of it, he saw this demon cast out. I don't know if you've ever been around somebody who's had an epileptic seizure, but when I was in high school, I remember I was in the choir, and we were at a huge assembly. There was over 2,000 people in my high school that I graduated from. And I was in the choir, we were on bleachers, and there was a girl in front of me who was older than me. She was in a different grade, but we went to church together, so we did know each other. And she started having an epileptic seizure. And I guess because we knew each other, she turned around to me. And I mean this, her eyes were rolled back in her head. She was convulsing, bit her tongue. She fell into my arms on this bleacher. I was only like 16 or 17 years old. It's the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And I guarantee you, it scared the fire out of me. I didn't know what to do. And I believe that something similar to that happened to these disciples. And I can relate that if you see something like that happen, if you say, in the name of Jesus, come out, and instead of the person being just totally free, they have a seizure and it gets worse. That's what happened with Jesus. I suspect that's what happened with his disciples. It's not that they didn't have faith, but when they didn't see something line up with their faith, they were more sensitive to what they could see, taste, hear, smell, and feel. They were more sensitive to their five senses than they were to God. And I can guarantee you, brothers and sisters, there are many of you watching this program that you believe God can heal today. You're even praying for it. But the truth is, you're more sensitive to what the doctor has to say than you are what the Bible has to say. you're more sensitive to what public opinion says, what your relatives have to say about it, than you are what God's Word has to say about it. You're trying to believe God for prosperity, but you know everybody else is talking poverty and talking it's a hard time, it's hard economic times. This company is downsizing, and you are more sensitive to what those people have to say than you are than what the Bible has to say. There's some of you trying to believe for your marriage, and you know God can do it, and you're praying for it. But the truth is, your mate, what they say, carries more weight with you than what God's Word has to say. It's not that you don't have faith. It's the fact that you have more than what you need. Unbelief. You got unbelief that is counterbalancing. It's negating your faith. I don't believe it's proper to talk about little faith and big faith. But I believe it's more accurate to talk about weak faith and strong faith. Over in Romans chapter 4, it talks about Abraham, says, being not weak in faith, he did these things. Your faith can be diluted. You know, you can take a tea bag and put it in a cup, and it will totally flavor the water in that cup. But you take that same tea bag, and if you throw it in the ocean, did you know it's not going to change the ocean? It'll be so absorbed, so diluted, that it's just like you could never tell that anything was ever put in there. But you put it in a cup, and it will do that because it's strong, because the proportion of tea to that little bit of water makes a difference. The fact is that it doesn't take much faith. Just a little mustard seed amount of faith is more than enough to do anything if it's not diluted by being put into this lifestyle of unbelief. And the sad fact is most of us just allow huge, huge reservoirs of unbelief to flow into our life. We watch and listen to things and think things that we shouldn't ever be thinking on. And because of it, we have this huge pool of unbelief, and then your little mustard seed amount of faith, it just is so diluted, it is so weakened, that it's not accomplishing anything. And so what you need is not more faith. You just need less unbelief. I think that most people live with this concept that I need more faith. The faith that you used to get born again was the greatest miracle that you will ever have in your life. And it doesn't leave. The Bible says that the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith. Faith is a fruit of your born-again spirit. You do have the supernatural faith of God. You do not have a faith problem. You've got an unbelief problem. We allow unbelief to come into our life, and it dilutes, it negates, it counterbalances, it pulls in the opposite direction. Man, these are important, important things that I'm saying. I mean big concepts. And all of this goes back to a hardened heart. We have knowledge about God, but we're hardened. We aren't as sensitive to that as we are to what the world has to say, to what the criticism is. And we've got to get to where we are so focused on God that we are sensitive to Him and hardened towards the unbelief that comes through people's opinions, through the world's opinion, through this political correctness, and all of these kind of things. We can do it. We can reverse this process.
Thanks to our partners, Phase 1 of Charis Bible College was completed debt-free. Because of you, thousands are being equipped and discipled to further God's kingdom in every aspect of life. But we're only beginning. As more and more lives are being touched through this ministry, our student body is growing rapidly as well. Students from all over the world are pouring into Charis Bible College, and already we're near capacity. To remedy this, we're building Phase 2, the larger half of our Woodland Park campus. Currently, there's not enough parking space to accommodate our growing number of guests and students, so we've also begun construction on a parking garage. This multi-level garage will hold 1,000 cars, but it will also increase our building expenses by $18 million. If you're not already a partner, we here at Andrew Womack Ministries would like to encourage you to partner with us so that we can finish Phase 2 promptly and on time. With your support, no one will be turned away due to a lack of space.
Andrew's complete teaching series titled Hardness of Heart is available on a live teaching 4-CD set or on a 3-DVD set as seen on TV. You can also get this teaching in book form. Each of these valuable resources are available for a gift of any amount. This entire series is also available for audio download absolutely free from our website. Go to awmi.net to see all the ways you can get this teaching. The fourth audio teaching in today's series is titled, The Cure. It's available for a gift of any amount when you write or call. We encourage everyone to give, but if you're simply unable to afford it, Andrew and his partners will provide this fourth CD free of charge. To order this teaching or any other of Andrew's ministry materials, you can visit the awmi.net website 24/7, write to us at the address on your screen, or call our helpline at 719-635-1111, Monday through Friday from 4:30 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Mountain Time. We appreciate your generosity and hope to hear from you today. We'd like to point out Andrew's upcoming speaking schedule. Mark your calendars to come meet Andrew at one of these events. In the month of June, he'll be in Woodland Park, Colorado for the Caris Business Summit, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Ypsilanti, Michigan, Toronto, Ontario, and then again in Woodland Park for the annual Summer Family Bible Conference. In July, he'll be in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, and in Durant, Oklahoma. And in August, he'll be in Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, at the Sanctuary in Woodland Park for the Healing Is Here Conference, and in Chicago, Illinois. For more details on Andrew's next meeting in your area, visit our website at awmi.net.
Get ready to prosper and fulfill your God-given purpose at Caris Business Summit 2015. Expect to meet influential leaders and build relationships. Develop business insight to take your organization to the next level. Learn practical business skills you can implement immediately. And identify and capitalize on investment opportunities. Session topics include strategic business development, the laws of wealth, basic CEO training, and much more at this exclusive conference. Expanding businesses, advancing leadership, building wealth. Caris Business Summit 2015, June 10th through 12th in Woodland Park, Colorado.
I'd like to invite you to come and spend a great week with us in Colorado at our new facilities in Woodland Park. On June the 29th through July the 3rd, we're going to have our Summer Family Bible Conference. And we call it that because not only do we have ministry to the adults, but we have children and youth ministry. It's a great time. And it's just a full week. We have morning and evening sessions. In the morning, primarily, it's our Bible college instructors ministering. I'm ministering every evening. And it's just going to be a great time at our beautiful new facility in Woodland Park. So remember, it's June the 29th through July the 3rd, right here at our facilities in Woodland Park, Colorado.